The views expressed in this program do not reflect views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 474, to be broadcast on Wednesday, March 11th, 2026, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storchnut. If you are watching live on Facebook Live right now, then you can just comment down here below. But if you're listening to this in an audio file, you can simply send me an email at bicycletalk@gmail.com. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle calendar, the bicycle business. If you would like to leave a comment, you can just drop me an email. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, Spotify, iTunes, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Here it is. It's thawing out. That's not a rant, but it is a result of the thawing out, and that is potholes, sand, salt, and narrow roads. That's my rant. It's that time of year when we go through the major defrost, which is really, really encouraging and really wonderful, and it's just gorgeous to be outside right now. But I give you a big be careful out there as the spring thaw brings us out, and it tends to subject us to things like those potholes and those narrow roads and all the other hazards that are out there. So if you are going to be out riding in the spring, which it is not yet, 2 weeks to go, supposedly. I never believe any of it. I've lived in the Northeast my whole life, and I can tell you right now, you just don't depend on any of it. But we are going to be experiencing a change of weather, and it gets better and better. Today, we're expecting our temperatures to be up in the 60s. That's incredible. That's a lovely, lovely thing when it's in the 60s. So that really drags a lot more people out. But at the same time, it also puts a lot more people on the road, which also makes drivers of automobiles and trucks, motorized vehicles, they tend to get a little bit impatient with us this time of year. So please, if you are one of those drivers, then please, be a little more patient. We'd really appreciate it. We just want to ride our bikes. And yeah, we want to ride our bikes for lots of things. We want to ride our bikes for transportation. We want to ride our bikes for fun. We want to ride our bikes for fitness. We just want to ride our bikes. And if you're a cyclist and you're out there and you are listening to this right now, remember to respect the road and share the road, as we all should share the road, both whether we're driving our motorized vehicles or whether we're riding our bicycles and we're on the handlebars of the bike. No one is superior here. Got that? No one. All right. Moving on to a positive side. Daylight savings time and spring conditions. Yeah, that's it. That's what we're going to talk about here a little bit today. It's a good thing. It's an inspirational time of the year. I really love this time of year because it's just, there's such an incredible change out there. The morning chorus of the songbirds. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you probably don't ride a bicycle. If you don't know what it's like to smell spring, to smell the change and the things that are happening out there, you're probably not riding your bicycle. Now, of course, you can experience these things if you're out hiking or going out for a walk or maybe going for a run, that sort of thing. But on the bike, it just all comes at you very, very quickly. And it's really cool time of year. Can you tell I'm excited? I'm excited. What else do I hear on the positive side? Where you should live if you want to bike everywhere. We have a report here from an engineer who built a bike friendliness tool to find out. We'll talk about that a little more in the show. And I got to mention it. Tadej Pogačar wins the Strada Bianca. Of course he does. what is with this guy? This guy comes out and he blows away with 81 kilometers to go and solos himself off the front of the peloton. Now, I want to mention here that this is a full peloton of riders. Yes, he's got a team that's supporting him and blocking for him and trying to keep the others from getting away and chasing him down. But there's a lot of really strong people and very fit people in that peloton, and they couldn't pull him in 80 kilometers worth of time. My goodness. So let's add a little bit of information onto this, and then we will get more into this in the show. The Slovenian shared he has not seen, we have not seen his power data since 2020. Reason being, they're holding back on it. They don't want to reveal any major secrets that's going on with him. But the Slovenian shared some key stats from his incredible ride. Pogačar's peak 5-minute power during the Strada Bianca was 460 watts and surely came at the time he launched his solo. I'll have a little bit more in the show because we got a little bit of things we can talk about here about good old Tade. Tade's quite an amazing person to watch. He is certainly a phenom. No question about it. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. Cervical Fusion Blues. Yeah, I still got them. But, you know, it's getting better. I'm getting stronger. I'm learning more about my position of my bike. I'm doing a lot of shoulder work. I'm doing a lot of upper back work, lower back work. And I can't tell you enough good about paying attention to physical therapists and also paying attention to people that are well versed about how to maintain shoulders and maintaining flexibility in your upper body. It's really been a huge help for me. And, you know, I'll just keep touching base on this as I learn more, but I am finding that as I have been practicing this now for the last, I guess I'm up to almost 4 weeks, I am finding myself more comfortable being in the proper position on my bike than I was before when I was in the lazy position on my bike. So yeah, there is a proper position. There is a lazy position. A lot of us, if we've been riding our bikes for a long time, we fall into that lazy position. It's just kind of a natural thing, unfortunately, but it's not natural. It's not right. And you have to pay attention to this stuff all the time. So continuing to focus on things like yoga and correct stretching procedures and correct physical therapy procedures, you can get more comfortable on your bike. So if you're having problems with discomfort on your bike, A, maybe find someone who will do a good bike fit for you. But B, before you go get that bike fit, which I will be getting soon, work on some of your structural changes on your body to make sure that you are sitting on that bicycle properly before you get yourself into a situation where now you get a bike adjusted, but it got adjusted for your bad habits and not for your new good habits. So let's take a look at that as a possibility if you are going in that direction. So we will move on. I just can't tell you how much I'm learning about this. It's just been it's amazing because you know you think you know it all. You know, I'm the know-it-all cyclist guy. I'm Pedaling Ron. I'm the guy who knows all about everything there is to know about cycling, right? No. Not at all. I have just yet begun to learn about what there is to know about cycling. Yeah, I've got a lot of information. Yes, I've learned a lot along the way, but every day I learn more. It's great. It's really, really cool. So let's take a look at, since, let's look at heart rate. All right, heart rate is, it's just, I had a brand new person in my spin class this morning, indoor cycling classes, I prefer to call them, and she was new at this, and she has taken classes before, but had never taken my class, so I informed her that she was up for a little bit of difference compared to what you might get in a quote-unquote typical spin class, because I don't teach that way, I teach indoor cycling. Indoor cycling to me is what I've learned outdoors brought indoors and hopefully brought to a point where you can help learn more about what your body can do and how to train your body and get it used to and more accustomed to riding outdoors. So that's the whole premise behind what I do. Heart rate. I've been harping on this heart rate thing for years. I really like it a lot. I think it is a very useful tool. I teach an hour and a half long class on Sundays, and which is a lot of time to be sitting in the saddle, which I do require getting out of my saddle because it's a little too much pressure for that much time. But anyway, it's a long, hard workout, and they're kind of designed around that. It's my hardest workout of the week, sort of like if I'm riding outdoors and I've got, you know, I'll find myself doing a little bit harder work when I'm outdoors because of the hills, and you can simulate hills on an indoor bike, but you really can't exactly have a hill in front of you. It's just different. That's all I can tell you. But anyway, I had a really hard workout on Sunday. So today, my heart rate never saw anything over 70% of max. Matter of fact, zone 2 was my friend today. So I hung out there for a while. If you don't know what any of this is, listen on, because we're going to talk a little bit more about power versus heart rate. And so power is the amount of wattage that you can put out on your bike. If you have a wattage meter on your bike, you'll be able to see that on your computer. If you don't have a wattage meter on your bike, then you're not going to really know what you are putting out. I do not have one on my bicycle at this time, but I do have one on the indoor training device that I am using. So I can at least get a rough idea within 10% of what my real wattage is. I call it virtual wattage, but it's close. It's definitely close. So power accurately measures how hard you're working, while your heart rate measures your body's response to the workout. Any increase in the effort instantly elevates your power data, whereas heart rate data is slower to respond to the heightened effort. So yeah, your heart rate is definitely going to be a little bit on the slow side when it comes to the amount of effort you're putting out. I found that the workout I did over the weekend, I was riding at what I like to call comfortably hard, or fitness threshold, FTP, and I would ride there for 2 minutes, and then I would do a 30-second hard effort. Hard effort is described basically as either a cadence increase, so you're spinning your legs around a lot faster at the same amount of pressure on the pedals, or more pressure on the pedals and maybe not spinning as fast but putting a lot more power into it. Either one works really well if you can apply both at the same time, so a little extra effort placed on the resistance on the machine and then include the high RPMs that go along with that. That will elevate your heart rate very quickly, and it'll also push your power up really quickly. Now, what happens is that you immediately feel the difference as you're pushing down on the pedals, because you can feel the power change. And you can see the power change if you have a meter that does that. But you don't necessarily see the change in the heart rate until sometimes after those 30 seconds that you put out all that hard effort. Then you return back to your regular power, and then you repeat that 4 times. I'm not going to get into heavy explanation on the workout. It was just really hard, and we did 4 sets of it, and it ate up a good 48 minutes of time. So it's a lot of work. It's definitely a lot of work. So an increase in effort instantly elevates your power data. Okay, so that's the big thing that I was seeing there. But it does take a while to catch up. And sometimes when you've taken the power or the effort off of your work, you'll see your heart rate then climb way up high as you backed it off. It's just that it's a slower response, that's all. And 30 seconds isn't a long time to spend at that high level of effort. So, you know, it's just going to work out that way. Over time, you will find that it responds maybe a little bit quicker. But heart rate is easily influenced by things that influence the body, like temperature, hydration level, fatigue, stress, caffeine, all those things. Yes, caffeine can jack up your heart rate. It's all true. Power output is only influenced by effort. As hard as you can push or as fast as you can spin up that hard effort. So if you want to achieve a higher wattage during a ride, you either have to increase your cadence at a given resistance or keep your cadence at the same and increase your resistance. Either method will result in a higher output and an increase in your speed if you're on a bike that moves forward, unlike the ones that I'm using right now, which don't go anywhere. Both power and heart rate help you train more effectively using training zones. Your heart rate zones and power zones enable your workouts to become more personalized, purposeful, and productive. Let's see here. Where's that little piece that I was going to talk about? This should be right here. So what is this all about? How do you know what your heart rate is? You kind of have to do a test to really get this down. You have to do an FTP test. I would encourage you doing it with someone else, possibly even someone who could be just standing by your bike and keeping you motivated by, you know, telling you how good you're doing. Come on, keep it up, and also monitoring your numbers at the same time. You have to kind of do a time trial here. Not kind of do a time trial, you have to do a timed trial. So a time trial is a set amount of time, 10 minutes or 20 minutes of extremely hard effort, as hard as you can handle, and then recording the heart rate that you are working at until you push yourself to exhaustion. And that'll give you a really good idea where your highs and lows are. It'll give you an excellent idea where your highs are, not necessarily your lows, but it will help you for calculating that out afterwards. So we have fitness zones. We have the five heart rate zones that we work with. Zone 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Okay. Zone 1 is very, very light. It's only 50% to 60% of your highest heart rate, your maximum heart rate. Zone 2 is 60 to 70%. That's where I played with this morning. I let my body recover from what I did yesterday. It's a great recovery level. It's really, really hard to stay there for a long time. You'd think, well, it's really easy to ride easy. It's not as easy as you think. But especially if you're not monitoring it with a heart rate monitor. That's the key. If you're not monitoring it, how do you know what easy is? You do it by perception. And perception is not always an accurate gauge. All right, just saying, that's all. Everyone I have trained and I have worked with as far as heart rate goes, they all train way harder than they should be. They're all perceivably in a very easy place, but they're not there. They're not there when you look at the numbers. So let's go to zone 3. Zone 3 is moderate. You're at 70 to 80% of your max. I tell people that that is also often where you will find your fitness threshold, your FTP. So I find that 75 to 78% of my max is my zone 3 FTP, comfortably hard is what I like to call it. Comfortably hard is a place that you could hang out for an extended period of time. You're going to be working hard. You're going to be breathing hard. You're going to feel that heart rate working. You're definitely going to get yourself not quite out of breath, but definitely laboring, breathing wise. And that is going to be your zone 3. Zone 4 is hard. So I would say I actually place zone 4 and zone 5 into what I call uncomfortably hard. Uncomfortably hard is a place that you could ride, but you can't ride there for an extended period of time. So it's going to be a little bit tough to do during your workout if you're doing an actual timed and intelligent workout. We'll say that it's going to be 80 to 90% of your max. That's really hard for me. 80 to 90% is real hard. And zone 5 is 90 to 100%. 100%, if you can hit 100% on your bicycle and still stay conscious, then you need to reevaluate things because you're probably not getting the proper numbers, because once you hit 100%, you lose consciousness. It's not a good thing. So if you're spending a lot of time in zone 5, maybe it's because your zones need adjusting, and that is not unusual. And once again, you can do that by doing basic tests. So the benefits of training in each heart rate zone. Zone 1, very light. This is a low intensity zone. Training at this intensity will boost recovery and prepare you to train at a higher heart rate zone. This is a zone used during warm up and cool down or during recovery activity. Zone 2 feels steady and light. You should be able to maintain this intensity for a very long time. Zone 2 is all about improving endurance, and it should be an essential part of every exercise program. This zone helps your body become more efficient in oxidizing or burning fat and increases muscular fitness and capillary density. Zone 3. Working in heart rate zone 3 is especially effective for improving the efficiency of blood circulation in the heart and skeletal muscles. Training in this zone will make you stronger and efficient. It also it's also the zone where the lactic acid picks up in the bloodstream. Zone 4, hard. Yeah, 80 to 90%. It's where things get to be more uncomfortable, for sure. That's why I like to call it uncomfortably hard. Breathing is fast, open mouth, and you are training aerobically. Training at this intensity will improve your speed and endurance, and your body will become more proficient at using carbohydrates for energy. The zone will also condition the body to withstand higher levels of lactic acid in the bloodstream for longer. And then zone 5 is all out maximum effort. Heart, blood, respiratory system will be working at full capacity. Lactic acid will build up in the bloodstream very quickly, and you will not be able to continue this intensity for very long. Interval training can bump you into this zone, but it's not safe to stay here for long. So if you're spending more than, oh gosh, how do I put it? Let's say, no, you really shouldn't spend more than 10% of your workout in zone 4 or 5. It's just, you will start breaking yourself down if you do that. And remember, if you are spending that time in your workout at that level, you got to come way back down to zone 2. You got to let yourself recover in between. The level of fitness is really probably the best way to describe it. It's not necessarily how hard you can go. It is how quickly you recover from the hard effort down to the easy effort. So there's the old formula that is maximum heart rate is 220 minus your age for men, 223 minus your age for women. It's not 100% accurate. You really need to do that fitness test to be able to pull that out. So training with power is an entirely different thing. You need to meter your bike in order to train with power. The small device captures a precise amount of work or energy that's put into riding by measuring how hard, how much torque, and how fast, how much cadence a cyclist is pushing the pedals to keep them turning. The combined measurement is expressed in watts and is often referred to as power output. Power output varies considerably from person to person. And I like to explain this in a very simple way. if you're a very small person, like I am, then you're probably not going to see really high numbers in wattage just because of your size. If you're a very large person, like some of my friends I go out and ride with, and they're, you know, they're in the 220, 230 pound range, and they're not overweight. They're just, that's how big they are. They're just big people. They put out way more wattage than I do. And that is understandable. And it's normal. So anyway, wattage is wattage. It is what it is. What you need to learn is what wattage you're at where you are comfortable in relation to the heart rate that you're working with. So, you know, your functional threshold, or FTP, it's an essential element for power training. Okay, and it's an estimation of the amount of work you are able to do for approximately 1 hour. It serves as a basis for a lot of important metrics. Okay, the threshold power values serve as a cornerstone for setting up training zones. So it gets kind of crazy after a while to try to figure all this stuff out. But what it takes also is a lot of time. And you'll eventually figure these things out if you're using an accurate way of measuring your performance levels on your bike. If you are unable to do that, then we're not having a solid conversation here. I highly encourage a fitness app. And yes, your phone probably comes with something like that if you have a smartphone, because the smartphone may be connected to something like a watch, like I have right here, or I tend to like to use the chest strap, although I found my watch is dead on, same accuracy as my chest strap. I've got a pretty good quality watch. And it seems to be really, really close. It's almost spot on. So what I'm saying there is that the new watches, the wrist-mounted heart rate monitors, have gotten a lot better than they used to be, a whole lot better. So once you have determined that fitness threshold and you figure out where it is that you can comfortably ride for that full hour, you're going to be able to work off of that and set your workouts up off of that. So, and then you get to use the different zones that you're working on here, a percent of your FTP. So zone one recovery is 0 to 55% of your FTP. Remember, your FTP is that somewhere in that heart rate zone of 75 to 78% of your max, roughly. These are just vague numbers, and I don't want you to use them as an explanation for what you are doing. They're just a guide. That's the whole idea. Your zone two endurance is going to be 55 to 75% of your FTP. Zone three tempo is going to be 76 to 90% of your FTP. And zone four is your lactate threshold, 91 to 105% of your FTP. And zone five is your VO2 max, which is 106 to 120% of your FTP. So that's going to be quite a big jump over where you're at as far as your comfortably hard goes. And then zone six is your anaerobic capacity, and that's when we really push it out at 121 to 150% of your max. And then there is a zone seven here with power, neuromuscular power at 151% plus. These things are, when you get into zone five, six, and seven, these are not things that can be sustained for very, very long. So they should be applied carefully, is what I would say. And you get different benefits from each of these power zones. depending on what you're looking for. So when we talk about zone 5, 6, and 7, the VO2 max pushes your cardiovascular system, and it's going to help with you building up to be able to sustain high levels of effort for extended periods of time. Zone 6 is going to be putting out a higher force in a shorter duration, activating energy systems that can only be sustained for minutes at most. And zone 7, that crazy high level one of 151% plus of your FTP, all out maximum efforts lasts only for a few seconds during a hard sprint. That's it. That's it. So you can't really maintain that for very long. So what's better? Do I train by heart rate? Do I train by power? Good question. What kind of equipment do you have? Do you have a power meter on your bike? Then I guess you're training by heart rate if you don't. So if you do, then you can use that very, very effectively. The power rating is going to be more consistent. It's going to be easier to measure because it is what it is, I guess is the best way to put it. Heart rate is, it bounces around. It's slow to respond. It's not the same. So you have to be careful about getting yourself over your head with that. And then there's also what we call RPE, and that is perceived exertion, rate of perceived exertion. So this is a general statement here too. It's basically the way you feel and how you perceive your effort to be. And so it's a little bit harder to measure as far as that goes. It's subjective rather than objective. It's a measurement of how hard you feel your body is working. It ranges from 0 to 10 being no exertion on 0 and 10 for maximum exertion. So I would say because we have the equipment now to be able to go beyond rate of perceived exertion, that's a good thing. That's definitely a good thing because it'll give you a little bit more accuracy as far as that goes. If you don't care about any of this, that's okay too. It's fine. It's fine. If you just want to go out and ride your bike because you like to ride your bike, that's great too. It really is. But if you're looking in any way to improve or maintain or build off of what you have and try not to lose as much as like cyclists like me getting older, then you might want to pay a little bit closer attention to all these things. So why am I here? Well, that's a really good question. I'm here because of good old Tadej Pogačar. Tadej Pogačar caught my attention because of his effort this past weekend. And this guy is just, he's a phenomenal athlete. The man can process oxygen better than most everyone out there. I don't know what his VO2 max is. I keep looking, I keep Googling it, trying to find it, but I can't seem to get it. But I can tell you, it's got to be very high because he launched that attack, and that and that attack was over 400 watts, and that is just like, he's not a big guy. He's a small person. He's 5'9", and probably weighs roughly 135 to 140 pounds max. So his strength to weight ratio, another factor which I hadn't even included earlier, is just phenomenal. He's got, that's where his power comes from. People that are smaller, and especially these like Tour de France riders, Giro d'Italia riders, Vuelta a España riders, the big classics, their strength to weight ratio is really key to their performance, and their ability to maintain that for the amount of time they do it is also very key to their performance. That means they have a very high level of muscle mass and a very low level of fat. So the problem there is you need the fat to run the machine. So there's a fine line there between what's good and what's not good. And that's why these guys are paid the money that they're paid, and they have the science behind them to keep themselves there. So as impressive as Pagacha's attack was, just so you know, it wasn't as explosive as we've come to expect. Pagacha has a fiery kick of well over 1,000 watts that he's used to win on summit finishes, steal bonus seconds, and win stages in the Tour de France. But in the Strada Bianca, Pagacha looked to drop the entire peloton with a seated acceleration, which brought him up around 450 watts. So you can't hold that for very long, right? Then you have to settle in. So he settled in by what he has shared, once again, somewhere in the 300 to 350 watt range, and was able to maintain his fitness threshold at that level. So his average power was probably right around 300 to 325 watts. Once again, we don't have all of the information, but we do know that his peak 5-minute power during that stage at the Strada Bianca was 460 watts. And 460 watts is a whole lot of watts, folks. That's a whole bunch. Now, if you can sustain that for 5 minutes and then recover from it, that's why they never caught him. That's why they never caught him. He just launched such an impressive attack. The other guy, the big, big, big wattage guy to watch is Matthew Vanderpoel. He's another one. He's just a wattage monster. And he's also a much larger person than Tadej is, which makes him a great candidate for winning classics, but not such a great candidate for winning these 20-day stage races. He still performs well, but he's not at that same level. It's just, it's different bodies for different things in the sport. So just an amazing thing. Let's see here. Final congrats. So his average wattage that we know of right now, 340 average watts of power. His maximum was 460. His weighted power average was 360. His average speed was 38.8 kilometers per hour. It's just superhuman, folks. That's all I can tell you. It's just like, it's just a really, really hard thing to perceive, especially when, you know, we're nowhere. I'm nowhere near that. So how do you do it? Lots of training. Lots of science involved here too, and there's a whole lot of work that has to be done to be able to get yourself there. But it's really, really difficult. So for a long time, it's been estimated that Pagacha's threshold power, also known as his FTP, was around 415 watts. So that means that if he was averaging 360 watts, he was well below his FTP, which puts him in a very, very comfortable place. Yeah, anyway, it's just really, really hard to understand this level of human performance, but he certainly is someone that everyone is talking about. Heart rate of, oh, God, resting heart rate is 37. Very, very low. Now, when you get to be my age and you start having heart rates that are running down that low, you're off to the cardiologist and they're checking you for AFib because that's way too low. And when I was racing my bicycle, I was down around 38 when I was probably at my highest level of performance. And that was simply by checking my pulse with my fingers and a watch in the morning when I woke up. But that would be my resting rate. And then I was training off of that information. But that's old school and it was useful back then, but now we've got a lot more science involved here. So to me, it's just phenomenal that these guys can be in this kind of shape, but they're professional athletes. This is what they do. This is what they do for a living. So anyway, enough of that. Enough of that. Let's talk a little bit about riding on those defrosting roads. Okay, please be careful. Keep your ride smooth, avoid sharp turns, sudden hard braking that can cause skidding. Your brakes, use your rear brake more than your front. Obviously, that's something you would do anyway. Tire pressure, I'd keep it lower than you might normally keep it. And, you know, you're not out there to win a race. You're just out there to ride your bike. And this is early season, so you're just getting in some miles, some training miles. Maybe you're just getting back to commuting again. You're riding your bike back and forth to work, that sort of thing. But you got to really, really pay attention in this type of situation when we are defrosting our roads. Be careful, black ice. Black ice will put you on the pavement quicker than you can say black ice. It's just amazing. And try to avoid puddles, because in those that could be a pothole, and that pothole will send you flying over the handlebars. So you want to do that too. And a lot of people this time of year, when they're riding and they're just commuting, and you know, they don't put their fancy cycling shoes on and their pedals on, they just put a flat pedal on their bike. And then, you know, they've got the ability to put their feet down real quick if they need to. So that's definitely a thing you want to watch when you're out there. Watch out for slush and snow. It will take you out very, very quickly. And freeze-thaw cycling. In areas where temperatures fluctuate, be aware that melting ice can lead to slippery, wet roads requiring constant, diligent, and careful riding. A point in case here on the road I live on, there's many times the roads look really, really great, but there are two key points on my road that get colder quicker than any other place on the road. Both of them happen to be on sharp corners, and I see more cars banging off of guardrails in those corners than any other place on my road, because they take you by surprise. They'll really take you by surprise if you're on a bicycle. So you just got to stay sharp. You just got to really, really pay attention, or ride indoors as I do this time of year. I just don't play around. I don't play in traffic when it's ucky out. So that would be the thing I would really worry about ice, and you want to treat it with caution, and it's just, you just be really, really careful out there, because the handling of your bicycle is greatly affected by the conditions underneath your wheels. If you can go to a little wider tire this time of year, that's a great idea. It's very, very helpful. Wider tire, lower pressure. It'll give you a little bit more stability. It'll give you a lot more comfort. And doesn't matter how fast you're going. And if your concern is what my average speed dropped by 2 miles per hour, Fran and I have this saying, you should get over yourself. It's not that important. It really isn't. It's more important that you're out there doing the effort and that you're having fun doing it. That's why we ride our bikes, because we like riding our bikes, because we like to have fun. And, you know, if you get too serious about this, then it just takes the fun away. And I don't want anything to take the fun away. That's what this is all about. So, let's see, what else do I have on here? I got a lot of things on here that I'm just trying to think if we can actually get to them all. Oh, this is kind of interesting. So, did you know that there is, in New York City, there is a blessing of the bikes? Yeah. So, on a quiet Saturday morning, each and every spring, something special happens inside the world's largest cathedral. Cyclists roll through the towering doors of Cathedral Church of St. John the Divine in New York City, leaning their bikes beside the ancient stone columns as sunlight filters through the stained glass windows. Helmets dangle from the handlebars, road bikes, commuters, cargo bikes, and the occasional battered touring rigs sit side by side. And then a reverend steps forward, lifts a small vessel of holy water, and begins blessing the bicycles. The blessing of the bikes has become one of the city's most quietly meaningful cycling traditions. In 2026, it marks the 28th year, a brief but memorable gathering that brings riders together before one of the biggest city cycling weekends in North America. So it's a brief ceremony with a big message, and it takes place before the massive five-borough bike tour, filling New York streets with tens of thousands of riders. The ceremony itself only lasts for a few minutes, but that short window, it captures something essential about cycling culture: community, vulnerability, and joy. After a few welcoming words, the reverend sprinkles holy water across the assembled bikes. Riders bow their heads for a moment of silence. Remember cyclists who that they lost during the previous year. A reminder that cycling, even in vibrant cities, carries real risks. And then comes a celebration. The riders lift their heads, their hands to their handlebars, and ring their cycling bells. The cathedral echoes the sound. The dozens and sometimes hundreds of bells chiming together beneath the vaulted ceilings built more than a century ago. Moments later, just as quickly as it began, the ceremony ends. Yeah, there's a blessing of the fleet in New York City. We actually had an ordained minister come up to our rite of silence and say a short few words before we took off, a moment of silence before we rode, and then we were silent for the rite of silence, which was only about a 3-mile journey. But you know, everybody just stays quiet, and it's a demonstration of sorts. It's an honoring of those who have lost their lives to, or been hit and or injured and have a story to tell about a motorized vehicle versus bicycle encounter on the road. So anyway, I did have my friend Bruce show up a few years ago, and he did a blessing, and that was pretty cool. By the way, I have been in contact with the Ride of Silence organizer, and he is on his way to getting it all straightened out. He's already spoken with the Yukon Police Department about this, and we are on for the third week in May of this year. And I'll have more information on that as we go along. So anyway, it's a good thing. So yeah, blessing of the fleet, kind of a cool thing. What time do we have here? Okay, well, I've got one more little thing here. Actually, I've got more things here. So let's start with this one, because I did mention it earlier. And there was an engineer who put together a whole survey of best places to ride your bicycle in the world that are most bicycle friendly. He had different scores that he gave different cities for different things involved. So there, some of the cities were bicycle friendly or throughout. Others have pockets of infrastructure surrounded by car-centric sprawl. It all really kind of depends where you are and what they are. But most of the rankings focus heavily on Western cities, while offering inconsistent coverage for suburbs, smaller towns, and international communities. Others lean heavily on one category: government policy, infrastructure, mileage, and density of destinations, without fully integrating the lived experience of moving through a place by bike. So there's people for bike ratings, walk scores versus bike scores, the League of American Bicyclists, Bicycle Friendly America program. So anyway, here we go. The highest scoring cities, of course: Helsinki in Finland. Yep. Paris, France, number 2. Number 3, The Hague in the Netherlands. Rotterdam in the Netherlands, number 4. Stockholm, Sweden, number 5. Copenhagen, Denmark, number 6. Vienna, Austria, number 7. Amsterdam in the Netherlands, number 8. Antwerp in Belgium, number 9. Brussels in Belgium, number 10. And Cologne, Germany, M is number 11 on this list. And highest scoring cities outside of Europe are Minneapolis, Minnesota, number 1. Manhattan, New York, number 2. I've talked about both of these on this show often and how they're really working hard on getting their infrastructure together and making cycling a much more friendly and viable way to transport yourself. It's really cool. St. Paul, Minnesota. Yeah, Minneapolis, St. Paul. They're the twin cities, right? Bogota, Colombia is number 4. Arlington, Virginia, number 5. That's a surprise, but it is close to D.C. and does make a lot of sense. Cambridge, Massachusetts, Boston, good old downtown. Cambridge definitely is way up there. Montreal, Quebec, way up there. Somerville, Massachusetts, also suburb of Boston, way up there. Canberra is in the Australian Capital Territory, Vancouver, British Columbia, and Seattle, Washington. So those are your highest scores outside of Europe. And there's, there's three ways to score a city. The citywide score, traditional average across an entire boundary. The best area score highlights the strongest neighborhoods within a city, useful for someone deciding where to move. And the highest scoring point, the top performing single location, which is considered the least biased comparison tool between the cities. So the last metric helps address common distortion in rankings. Large cities often include sprawling suburban or rural areas within their borders, dragging down the overall averages. The highest point score isolates a city's peak bikeability without being skewed by geography. So there you have it. Lots and lots of things to know about the best places that you should be to ride your bicycle. It's very cool. I got some things that I'm just going to have to wait until next week on, because I had a really, really cool, a couple things. We did this. I've got a thing about refurbished e-bikes, which we will bring up next week, and how they could make more livable streets a movement. And I've also got another short piece here too, and this was how recreational cycling can lead to safer streets for all. Yeah, get it. It's for real. The more people we put on bikes, I've talked about this endlessly on this show, the more people we put on bikes, the safer the roads get. The more people we put on the roads, the safer the roads get. Perception is everything here. Not like your heart rate or your effort level, which we discussed at length in the show this week. But the more people that are seen on the roads, the safer the roads do become. But anyway, we'll get into those next week, and we will move on here. And let's see, we hit this. Yeah, there's so much discussed. There's also a piece that I want to talk about, and it was put together by Hans Rey, who is he's a Bosch ambassador. Bosch is an e-bike system that is used on electric bicycles, and they are definitely opinions, and he has an open letter to the industry, which we'll talk about next week on the show. And I just thought it had a really good perspective of people understanding exactly what these e-bikes are and what e-bikes aren't, and what electric mopeds are and what electric motorcycles are. There's a huge difference between all these, and we definitely have to sort this all out very, very soon, or else things are going to get very confusing and people are going to get hurt. So that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for more participation of cycles on the road, not less participation of cycles on the road. And when people get hurt, regulations come in. When regulations come in, then, of course, we have problem, and that we do not want to have, basically. So anyway, we'll get to that next week. In the meantime, we're going to move on to the event section of the show, and that is I want you to save the date for the 2026 Bicycle Leadership Conference in Dana Point, California, March 17th through the 20th. And the 2026 Giro d'Italia takes place from Friday, May 8th to Sunday, May 31st. And it will feature its famous Grande Partenza with the first three stages in Bulgaria before transferring over to Italy, culminating in Rome. The 109th edition includes challenging mountain stages in the Alps and Dolomites, a key time trial, and finishes with the traditional circuit race in the Italian capital. If you didn't see that last year, they did a really, really cool coverage on that, and they were flying drones over the top of the peloton, and it was cool. It was really cool because it was a shorter circuit and you could really see the race. It was like you were sitting in a helicopter that was flying over the top of the peloton, and they were doing it in segments, so you didn't see the whole thing, but this is the future. This is going to happen. We're going to see more and more of this as AI improves, as drone engineering improves. I think we're going to see even better race coverage than we have seen in the past. It's going to make you feel like you're sitting in the middle of peloton, and that is pretty cool. The Tour de France 2026 will take place from July 4th to July 26th, kicking off their Grand Départ in Barcelona, Spain, and concluding with the traditional finish on the Champs-Élysées in Paris, France, featuring a 21 challenging stages and two rest days. So it's exciting. It's all coming. The Ride of Silence, I spoke about it a little bit earlier in the show. The 24th anniversary year, Wednesday, May 20th, 7 p.m. worldwide. Or if you are here in Storrs, Connecticut, where we are broadcasting from, it will be at the Town Hall Community Center parking lot is where we will be starting, with overflow parking over at E.O. Smith High School. So anyway, we'd love to have you come. I'm going to start pushing this really hard right now. I would love to see more people there. Think about if we could get a couple hundred people out on the road to make a stand on this, and just show people that, you know, we do belong on the roads. It would be a really, really good thing. So mark your calendar. It's a Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. Yeah, it's only 3 miles. It's not like a bike ride, but it's not for that purpose. This is for a purpose of gaining attention towards cycling. If you do one thing for advocacy this year, just one thing, do this. And if you don't do anything for advocacy and you ride a bike very selfishly, I said it, then, you know, consider doing this, because this will just be better for all of us. So give us your opinion. I want to know what's going on here. Finishing points. Wattage and heart rate. Do you use it? Is it important to you? Are you out on the roads yet? It's kind of sketchy out there at the moment, but you know, we're getting there. And remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is easier and safer for more people, because when more people ride bikes, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can, you know, help people enjoy and know the joy of cycling. I'm going to say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas. That's coming up soon too. We'll talk about that next week. And the lack of places to safely ride and do your part. And hey, take the Pedal and Ron Challenge. Consider parking that car or truck for a day and ride your bicycle instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving a motorized vehicle, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's at work today. And you can listen to past episodes on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really can save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org. Get on your bikes and ride!